This is the Cullinane and Green Report. Today we interview Brian Carroll.
Welcome to the Cullinane and Green Report. I'm Joe Cullinane.
And I'm Roger Green. And remember, we're on the bleeding edge, so you don't have to be. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with Brian Carroll. Brian is the CEO of InTouch Incorporated, a company focused on delivering effective lead generation, teleprospecting, lead management, and lead nurturing solutions for the complex sale. His blog, B2B Lead Generation, is read by thousands weekly, and he's the author of the book soon to be published, Lead Generation for the Complex Sale, published by McGraw-Hill.
Brian, welcome to the Cullinane and Green Report.
Thank you for having me today.
It's our pleasure. Brian, lead generation is a huge issue for our listeners, and you're a recognized expert in the topic. What are the essential elements of an effective lead generation program for a complex sale?
Why don't I quick define what lead generation is, and then I'll break in what I consider the big elements are. When I look at lead generation is a process of identifying the right people within the right companies, initiating a conversation with them, and then nurturing that relationship with them regardless of their timing to buy, until they're ready. So when we look at the essential elements, I think there's really three main things. I focus on what people's mindset is about how they view business development, and to think of lead generation really as a conversation instead of a campaign. And there's some broad sweeping things that can change as a result of that, but I found the fundamental mindset behind it is that lead generation is a conversation, and what you want to do is you want to develop relationships with people as early in their buying process as possible, because that's where you can make the biggest difference. So that's the one thing that I would like marketers to come away with, is it's not just about instant gratification. It's really about the marketers who are winning today, and the companies who are most successful, in my opinion, are the ones that are actually going beyond the traditional view of lead generation and taking a much more comprehensive approach.
Brian, in a slightly different direction, I'd like to ask you a question about your blogging activities. I know that you're an active blogger, and I'm curious why you started blogging, and has it turned out to be something that's useful in the context of lead generation, and what other benefits you get from it as well?
Well, I've been blogging for about 2.5 years, and my initial mindset behind blogging was I had no exposure to blogs beyond reading what was a blog, but I just didn't even know it was a blog because they didn't call it a blog. And what I wanted to do, you know, it was one of those things that it was, you know, it was a website geared towards executives. And I think if they called it a blog, people would have said, what is it? Yeah. So I just called it a website. So I was pretty naive when it came to blogs. And why I initially got into it is I was looking at our own marketing mix and white space, and I always had an ability, and it's part of who my makeup is. I'm a guy who will read something and tell other people about it, or I'll find something in the magazine. In fact, I have sitting in my in-basket another article I ripped out that I'm going to scan and distribute to my team members that I think would be just a cool idea, and I annotated, et cetera. And so for me, blogging was just a natural extension of what I like to do, which is I like to find things I think are cool related to our business, related to a particular area. And what I was really interested in, because, well, what my company does is lead generation, is I couldn't find someone who was taking an attitude of looking at lead generation and focusing specifically on the complex sale. And so what I felt was there was white space available. No one had claimed that position yet, and I could be the first one that in essence would claim that position. And what my attitude is towards business development, though, is I want to teach people what I'm finding, what I'm learning. And I find that as people link to what I have to say and they share their thoughts and I read other people's blogs, I'm learning too. And one of the best ways I know to learn something is to write about it. And that's for me what blogging has become. Now, in terms of business development and the impact it's had on our company from a lead generation perspective, is we can attribute, I got a book contract with a major publisher as a result of blogging. I have received several unsolicited offers to buy our company because of the brand positioning that we have as a result of our blog and the other types of marketing things that we're doing. But what I think makes it unique, you guys, is that it's coming at it from an authentic point of view. You got to come from a point of view that's real. It's devoid of corporate speak. And I also bring the perspective with my blog of coming at it.
Good. Brian, in fact, we met through your blog. Blogging, I think, is a very neat thing, but it's very time-consuming. Roger and I
yes.
really enjoy podcasting. Now, mm-hmm. those of you listening out there, we're ready for our book deal. So, you know.
That's right. That's right.
Send the emails. We're ready.
I've been practicing my autograph.
Great. Well, that's how we met, Joe. And what I thought was really cool is you had some great ideas, and I know we'll probably talk about it later, but the power of RSS that allowed me to discover you. And why that is I set up certain pings using Technoradi and some other tools that allows me using, in a smart way, scour the blogosphere, scour websites, in effect, and then, you know, you need to filter that down. And I read your article, and I was like, wow, this is a powerful idea. It aligns well with my audience. You know, I want to expose people to it. And I don't have a particular agenda with my blog. It's, you know, people know. It isn't about directly promoting my company. You can see who I am in my bio, and you can see I have my logo there. It was about the ideas, and it was about creating value, and it was about positioning and demonstrating I have an area of expertise. But the thing was, is until I began blogging, you know, I was getting media coverage in the local newspapers here pretty frequently, but that as a result of blogging and some of the other things, I've now gotten into much more national publications and national coverage, and it's just opened an entire audience. And I know for you, you and I have talked, you have people listening to your podcast from all over the world. And similarly for me with my blog, we've reached people all over the world. You know, every day I see email updates going out to 30 different countries, and I don't know. You know, to me, that's pretty amazing when I look at it. But it all began, though, with just putting ideas out there, and people started finding them. For you guys with podcasting and RSS was the vehicle I think people used to start finding me because they would get updates. And there's different information agents that people could look for a topic or subject or article. And I mentioned Technoradi before, and I don't know if you've talked to that before, talked to your listeners about that, but that's one of my favorite tools. And I know Google has some things and Yahoo has some things as well, but at least to kind of keep up to date with comments and that in the blogosphere.
Brian, I'd like to ask you another question or two about RSS and some of the related aspects of it.
Yeah.
You're obviously a pretty sophisticated user of these technologies, and I know most of our listeners are aware of them and are starting to use them, but there are probably some things that they're wondering about. And in particular, RSS, which is really a simple way of getting a subscription going with someone's podcast or blog, but essentially doing it in a pull rather than a push mode.
Right.
So the old-fashioned approach was you would subscribe to a magazine, you'd send your money in, or you'd tell them you want it, you'd fill out a form. They would have a record of all of your information, and as often as the periodical was published, they'd send it to you. Now, with the RSS, it's exactly the opposite. You kind of gather their information instead of them gathering yours, and you ping them periodically to see if there's something new, and if there is, you suck it down instead of having them send it to you from their perspective. Now, that creates some issues, because as someone who has a blog, when people use RSS to find you, you don't necessarily know that they're, in essence, subscribing to you. You have no anonymous subscriptions. How do you deal with that from a business development standpoint? And what other techniques or technologies do you use to kind of get a see the footprints of the people who are pinging and visiting your site and actually subscribing and listening to your podcast and your blog?
Roger, that's a good question, and I think you did a great job describing what RSS is and how it works. And what I wanted to do is just add to what you said, and I'll answer your question. What we're seeing with RSS, as you talked about, it's a pull mechanism as opposed to push. A lot of people have started to beat the drum, and I still don't know that it's going to change. But let's talk about email just quickly for a minute, because I think from a listener perspective, it'll give them a context to come from. Email is something that's, I would call as a push technology. So your listeners are getting email newsletters, for example. If you get an email newsletter and you like one issue, but you find the next five are irrelevant to you, you have two options. You can unsubscribe from that email newsletter together because you have a huge inbox of hundreds of emails coming to you every day, or or you can just bear with it and let all that stuff queue up and then have a cleaning day. And what I found is cool about RSS is that email is an extremely useful tool. I don't believe that RSS is going to replace email. I think it's something that's going to be an addition to it. And why that is what's cool about RSS is that I, as a user, I subscribe. And if I know that someone has relevant content, and this is the cool thing about the blogosphere, too, and blogging and podcasting, is that you don't necessarily have to be an editorial person who's looking at what three articles am I going to pull together to create a newsletter. You simply put a post in your blog, people via RSS, they get that, and they can read it when it's convenient for them, and it's apart from their email. And so it's in a separate place, which is an RSS reader, also called an aggregator. So now I want to answer your question about how do you track things, because based on today's technology, and I'm actually in some talks with a few companies about solving this challenge, but here's because we're looking at lead generation, demand generation, and my company does email campaigns on behalf of our clients as a value-added part of our teleprospecting, lead nurturing, lead management services. So anyway, what we view RSS as being, it's a way to get information to people. But the challenge that you have if you want to have an RSS feed is getting people to subscribe to it. So the first step is there's this critical mass that I believe is going to happen with some changes that are happening with the average user's PC infrastructure. For one, most people either have to use a web-based reader or they need to use a software program. I personally use a software tool called Atenza because it integrates with Outlook, and that's a fee, and I wanted to pay money because I want to support this kind of technology being developed. So you can buy a license to that, but they allow a trial. Before that, I used a tool called BlogLines. Now, when it comes to answering your question about tracking, right now, the amount of data that, and I think you guys are going to work in this challenge too, but right now, the amount of data that we have about RSS feeds is we don't know the specific individuals who are subscribing to our feeds, but using some free tools as well as some fee-based tools, I'll give you an example. FeedBurner is a free tool that allows you to do tracking of your RSS data in terms of your subscribership. And I'll give you an example. I'm a podcaster as well. I'm nowhere near as good as you guys are. You guys do a great job. But with my humble attempts at podcasting, what we noticed with RSS is in my first 3 months, I had gotten a little subscribership base, and then something magical happened. iTunes finally added podcasts to be available online so subscribers could discover my podcast. And I don't know about you guys, but in less than a week, the amount of listeners I had to my podcast feed doubled. So it took me 3 months to build up that certain number, and in 1 week, it grew by 100%. And why that was is it was because of RSS being easily subscribed, that people didn't need to install another RSS reader. They already had one built into iTunes to subscribe. So here's what I could track. I can track the number of iTunes listeners I have, or Yahoo also has an aggregator for podcasts. But what I don't know is I do not know people who come to my website and click on the MP3 file and just listen it to their computer and get streaming data. And this is an age-old problem that people who do public relations struggle with, is there's clipping services that tell you what areas you've been covered if you do press releases. But the age of how PR is being done, there is PR 1.0, and David Meerman Scott, who's a friend of mine and also an author, coined something he calls PR 2.0. And really what it's about is, you're doing with RSS, people aren't going to huge portal sites to get their news and facts and information. What they're doing is they're going direct to the source. And so the value I see right now of RSS is, even though it doesn't give you the tracking you'd like, I'm going to be working on this challenge. I know you guys are, and there's other technology providers out there. But that what it does do is at least tells you the impact you're making. You can look at how many people are subscribing to your feed, and how many times they listen to specific content within that feed. And that's about as good as we have today. So where I think the next step will be is, there's going to come a time, and I know some people are doing it right now, where you're able to give people the ability to subscribe to your feed, and it's more of a secure feed. And the challenge is how do you move to that step? So that was a long-winded answer to your question, but a very good one. I hope, you know, from a listener point of view, that if you have one takeaway, get on the task of getting an RSS reader and subscribe some blogs just for once. If you have blogs that are out there you like to read, try RSS and you'll find that it's a really effective way of getting input. But believe it or not, you guys, I also allow people to subscribe to my email, and I believe I have as many people who get email updates to my blog as they do via RSS. And that's for a lot of people. So if you're a podcaster or a blogger, look at some ways you can update and ping your audience, and think multimodal too. Just don't look at RSS as the end-all be-all. But I think it's a growing medium, and the way it is today is, it's the railways right now are being built. And once the railway's built, whatever you transfer on those tracks is going to be up to you. And right now, the content going across those tracks is blog articles and MP3 files and video files. And right. I think there's going to be other things happening too.
Well, that's very interesting. And it actually reminds me that there's some stuff from Web 1.0 that's still in the gene pool of Web 2.0.
And right.
One of the terms that was very popular for a while but is now just as unpopular is the term stickiness.
And right.
And the question was, how do you get people to click more or to read more screens and whatever? And it seems to me with RSS, we're kind of back to that challenge, that we can get somebody into the tent, so to speak, by getting them interested, and they see there's something that's happening because of the technorati or something has led them to your site. But then once you've got them there, the other things that you might engage them in, like downloading a white paper or just getting an email notification when you change something on your site, such as a new podcast or whatever, that kind of closes the spark gap quite a bit and gives you the chance to start a conversation with that individual.
Absolutely. And you bring up a good point. If you think in terms of a multimodal approach to your business development and lead generation, what that means is as you think about your blog or you think about your podcast, for the listeners that are moving in that direction, but also for those that are doing other types of traditional direct marketing, marketing, such as making a white paper available. And so on your blog, you could write, we have a new white paper available. Here's it is. Here's a summary of what was talked about. You can download it here. There's a couple of interesting things that I've seen is there's some people that require you to fill out a form to get access to that white paper. And what I found is you don't necessarily, if you're going to go that route, I encourage people to put as little requirement on the types of information people need to enter as possible. Keep it to a minimum. Because what I found is you need to have a fair exchange of information. And a lot of people will, if you require them to fill out everything about their children's name, social security number, and it feels that way to them, that it's intrusive or invasive, or that they have a fear that they're going to get a salesperson calling them the next day, most people just don't want the hassle, and they're going to go and try to find where other free information's available. So what I would encourage people to look at is, you know, to your question, Roger, your RSS feeds, if you can't get that data from the feed itself, it still doesn't negate the quality of the content you're sharing. And what you need to think of is in terms of understanding how your customers buy and understanding the types of information they're looking for, look at ways you can get little bits and pieces of information so it's like a conversation. We have a white paper available. Please enter your email address and we'll send you a link, and maybe that's what you begin with. And then what you can do is over time, if there's an event that comes up and you invite them to a webinar, you might ask them for their first and last name along with their email address and their phone number. And then the next opportunity comes up, but if you have a good database mechanism in place, you can start pulling these pieces together. So view that it's a conversation where you get to know someone over time. We don't get married on the first date. You know, we just want to engage people, earn their trust. When that's from a blogging standpoint, what I love about it is that it's easy for people to get what they need, find what they want, and also see what other people are having to say related to that discussion. That's what's pure about it. It's just trying to keep that same type of mindset throughout your marketing process so that from a potential customer's perspective, they begin to view you as really being the expert, the trusted advisor, the go-to company, the go-to individual that they want to engage. And as I said earlier, when you want to engage people early in their buying process, people are reading your blog, people are downloading white papers, or reading articles on your website. If you have articles you submit to other websites, your bio is a perfect tool there to let people know who you are, where they can get more information, so you should have a hyperlink there. And so just think of a way of how you can wrap people in and look at the various types of information people are going to use in their buying process. Does that make sense, you guys?
Yeah, that's very sage advice. I think that's words to live by.
Absolutely.
Think in terms of blogs are broadly targeted in a sense that anyone who has access to the internet can typically reach your blog, or anyone that has access to the internet can typically reach your podcast. The same is true with articles, your branding, your PR. So it's more broadly targeted in terms of who can access that information. It's less measurable too. But as you understand the various other tools available to you, so your website, once someone gets to your website, you have a little bit more granularity because you can tie an IP address to a particular visitor. And so that's where your web analytics comes into play. And so the next thing you might have available to you could be webinars and events. Again, you're getting more information from people. The amount of time invested by the person who's getting the information is higher as well. But as they go through the process, it starts getting more narrowly targeted, more interactive, and more measurable. At some stage, you may have your salespeople actually call these people because they requested a phone call from a salesperson. And then you actually are moving from having that initial online dialogue to not knowing who they are to actually having a conversation with someone who not only knows who you are, but they know what you do, what issues you can help them solve with, and you have a much higher quality dialogue. So that's where that multimodal, multi-touch approach happens, is a lot of companies kind of have this gap where most of the information they have available on their website and information their salespeople have is all sales-driven. And so you need to actually move further up the funnel and look at what other types of things can you do that gives valuable insight to people regardless of their timing to buy, so you can engage them earlier in the buying process. And that's why I think podcasts and blogs really fill a great void at that very top end of the funnel. I know Roger and Joe, you guys are working on doing some things, though, even to reach people at every stage of the funnel, which I was pretty interested in as you described that to me. But when I think in terms of, in a general sense, podcasting allows you to reach an audience that's broader but are interested in that particular topic. So that's what I mean when I talk about RSS and how you drive people to it. And how the various tactics you'll use will continue to draw people in and get that additional information that you're really seeking from a marketer's perspective or sales perspective to derive and collect ROI information.
Those are good thoughts, Brian. It's actually a fairly complex topic, and I think you've laid it out in a fairly direct way. But it's probably one we're going to want to come back and talk to you about in the future as some of your work proceeds in that area, because I think it's one that really gets right to the heart of the business development issues here.
Thank you. And if your listeners want more information on it in your show notes, one of the things you can point them to is I wrote an article about thought-leading content and lead generation that actually has some of what it actually summarizes and has a graphic that shows what I was just talking about.
Oh, great. In fact, let's grab that link from you and we'll put that on the podcast site.
Brian, just a question about podcasting. How do you see podcasting fitting in this array of products to get to customers? I mean, relative to blogging, what's different about it, and how do you think podcasting should be used as a lead development tool?
Well, it is, podcasting, frankly, is one, very buzzworthy, and that's one of the appealing things about it as a medium, in that people are interested in learning more about it. I would say right now, in terms of how it's being used, overall podcasts, from an audience standpoint, compared to other media, is still pretty tiny. But it's growing astronomically, and my area of focus and interest is for companies that have a complex sale. But my human resources manager and our chief operating officer here, we're looking at doing podcasting as a way of showing the personality of our company from a recruiting standpoint and doing a regular podcast show. So recruiting new employees, for us, our company's growing so quickly, that's a major challenge. So we're looking at our recruiting process the same way people look at their sales process. But let me get into some of the examples with podcasts. I think it's a great way to share thought-leading content. And what it's already successfully being used for is almost a talk radio type of format, except it's what's interesting about it, and Joe, you and I talked about this before offline, is that podcasting is a little edgier because it isn't as polished. You get to hear the whole person. And blogging, you get to read what someone's written. But believe it or not, I had a well-meaning person. You know, my attitude with my blog is I want to get thoughts and information out there. And it's the only thing that I do that I don't have an editor read before I publish it. And why that is that I want it to be real and authentic. But believe it or not, some people, I've received some emails from well-meaning people pointing out grammar errors or spelling mistakes and other things. And frankly, I think to me, the ums and ahs people hear in conversation, if you produce things too much, then it starts to become markety. Yeah. And there's this authenticity to podcasting that I really like, because people get to hear the personalities behind the brand. And it's not so much, to me, in my opinion, it used to be telling people who you are. And that was where people looked at marketing. But frankly, what I think is more important is showing people in basically having who you are. It's not about that anymore. It's about how you do it. And what I think about sales and marketing and business development today is a lot of companies are in competitive markets. Some of your listeners are selling technology that may just be out of beta, and they know that they need to get to market quickly because that could easily be replaced. And so there's this mad rush to find people as quickly as possible. But when I think about podcasting and the process, what it's really about is it's about how you are as a person. And at the end of the day, a lot of your listeners sell business to business, but remember, it's not companies who buy, it's the people who work in those companies who buy. They buy from people. And so what we want to do is how we sell and market and how we talk to people and how we listen and how we engage them really makes a big difference. And so what I love about podcasting is that you can use it, as we talked about before, talk radio. It could be a one-way conversation, although you need to keep it short if you want to share tips of the day or ideas of the day. One of the things I think you've done a wonderful job with, and I'm just amazed at the people, and I'm honored to be one of your interviewees, is that you're doing podcasts with thought leaders and industry experts. And it's a great way for you to teach people and show people what you've learned and create a ton of value. Some other things, ways that I'm seeing podcasting being used, although this is an area that's growing. One of the things that I've done is you can actually take recordings of speeches. One of our clients actually is doing a road show, and they're doing a podcast while they're on the road. So it's like a behind-the-scenes look at what's happening as they're going around the country speaking to people about this emerging technology. And to me, I think it's really cool because they have the people talking, and it's the unedited version. It's the uncut version. And I think it's a whole nother way of reaching people. So if you do speeches, teleconferences, teleseminars, you can actually convert some of your content to be available to people, as long as it's thought leading, mind you, into a podcast as well. Right now, I don't think there's a hard and fast definition of podcasts, you guys. With podcasting, when you're talking with someone, and I don't know the exact study, but what I do know is it's not always what you say, which the written word is what you say. And your grammar and other things indicate to people a lot of things about you. And as I talked before about blogging, people can judge based on, did I use proper grammar? Did I spell correctly, etc. However, with podcasting, it's not just what you say, it's how you say it. And that's actually about 60% of what listeners get value from, is who that person is, the personality, the style, the inflection of their voice. All those things tell the listeners who you are and give them a sense of, is this a person I like? And when you think about the buying and selling process, there's four conditions I think need to be met for people to do business. One is they need to know who you are. They need to believe that you can help them and that you've helped other people like them. They need to see you as an expert. And they also need to like you to some extent. I seldom do business with people I don't like. What I think a lot of people forget is that no matter how big the sale is, it still can come down to people do make buying decisions based on emotion, and they backfill it with logical answers and feedback and facts and figures. But it's still, the buying and selling process is still an emotional process because we're people. And so that's what I think about podcasting is cool, is it's really just showing the personalities of people in my opinion, of an authentic way. And I hope that it doesn't lose that. I hope that it doesn't become a highly produced clone of talk radio. Because to me, then you're in the age of the soundbite. And I think for the listeners, they lose some of the richness of why podcasting is growing so grassroots and why it's creating the value it is for listeners. I was just talking with someone who actually is doing a podcast with his son out in the Bay Area, and he was telling me about a radio station that actually stopped doing the regular format. They were losing market share. This is in Silicon Valley. You guys might want to research this. But that they actually started putting up podcasts instead. from people would submit their podcasts. And I thought that was super cool.
That is.
Because
it's also so, low budget.
It's low budget. His name is Steve, and he works at a company called Eloqua, and he's an executive there. And I just thought it was so cool. He's been doing podcasting with his son for almost a year now, and I was blown away by that. So I feel like such a neophyte.
Those are all excellent points.
Yeah, user-created content is really taking off, and as you mentioned, YouTube, and there are so many places that people are expressing themselves now. We can't let you go without asking you about the book. You've recently published a book, and can you just give us a little bit about the book and why you wrote it and what it's about?
Well, sure. The title of the book is Lead Generation for the Complex Sale, and really, why I wrote it was I had personally been looking for a book that took a comprehensive approach to lead generation, and we've talked about it to some extent today. You know that it's a multi-touch approach. That you're trying to engage people earlier in the buying process as possible. And, you know, there's scores of great books on direct marketing and branding and advertising, direct mail, even cold calling. What I couldn't find is a book around that. If people want more information about the book, is they can visit leadgenerationbook.com, but people can also just find it online as well. Go to Amazon or CEO Read, et cetera, if they want to. So thank you so much for having me today.
It was a pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much, Brian. We look forward to speaking with you again and reading the book. And, of course, we bring people from the bleeding edge, and so people have had a chance to get a little insight into the book without even buying it so far. But go out and buy the book. We recommend it.
Thank you much, you guys.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Thanks, Brian. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Cullinane and Green Report. We hope you'll join us again next time. In the meantime, remember, we're on the bleeding edge, so you don't have to be.